Good morning, STD. So I'm an old New York City club kid, so I know that it's really bad to follow an announcement of a free drink ticket. So it is what it is. So my job is to talk a little bit about PrEP and STIs, and I have been absolutely frustrated by your meeting because it's been too good, and all of my slides have been presented, so this entire meeting I have kept changing them to cause a lot of havoc and torture. So sitting in the opening plenary, half of my slides were presented in a much better way than I can do it. So I mixed it up a little bit, but keeping the spirit of what I was supposed to speak on. So I'm actually going to start with something that I've not seen here, which is really interesting. So it's been remarkable in a good way that when in the STD space you talk about HIV risk and the risk of HIV acquisition, what happens is you focus on your very important diseases, our very important diseases of syphilis and rectal gonorrhea and chlamydia, and the related incidence that happens after a diagnosis of that data, a diagnosis of that condition. In the HIV space, though we do talk about that frequently, we actually have other data that I've seen been presented here yet, which I think is worth blending into the mix in terms of why this entire remarkable meeting is so important and why I think STD is a shining beacon of what the future is, because you have dedicated so much space to this very important STI, which I think is a lesson that the HIV world needs to take for STIs and dedicate that same space for STI. Yeah. Okay, so... But it's true. And so I'm going to back up a bit and show you a little bit of data that comes out of the HIV space that should tell you why you're so inspiring and why this focus on preventing HIV is so important. So the CDC released data about a model, the potential incidence of HIV infection throughout the United States. And so they used old data, and what they did is generated a model that said that about 1 in 99 people in the United States could at some point seroconvert. That's the lifetime incidence expected. And the states that you see in black are the states that have the higher incidence. So it's 1 in 69 for New York. So the lower that number is, the higher possibility or probability of an incident HIV infection. So the data gets a little bit deeper than that. So we're going to dive in there for a moment, which is when you look at the lifetime risk of HIV in heterosexuals, something very remarkable stands out. And that is that this is an issue of health equity. You see black and Latino men and women, of course, the bar moved, so it's supposed to be about around black and Latinos. I'm going to make it disappear. But the black and Latino men and women have very high potential incidence of HIV lifetime. So you see the black women, 1 in 49, black men, 1 in 86. That's completely not okay. So as you see this, you should sort of acknowledge your role as the front line in changing this story, especially in this population. But when you leave heterosexuals and focus on MSM, the data is actually a bit more depressing or inspiring, which is what I think we should look at it as. Because again, this is not inevitable. It is a mathematical model. We can change this, and that's why we're here and why you've given so much space to HIV prevention in your STD prevention meeting, because HIV is just another STD. Lightning's going to strike me. But it's true. So... who's in the room? So anyway, the idea is that in terms of MSM, 1 in 6 are estimated to become infected sometime in their lives. But the apocryphal message is not that apocryphal, that 1 in 2 black MSM potentially could be infected and 1 in 4. That should piss you off, and that's the right response, and why you know that your work is so important in changing the epidemic of inadequate sexual health, which is the real epidemic that we're going to be fighting. So there's another thing that I haven't seen here yet, which is the conversation about the denominator for PrEP. Like, how many people need PrEP? And so Dawn Smith from the CDC did something wonderful. She looked at survey data and other data and used a couple of criteria and men who have sex with men, like have they had condomless sex in 12 months? Do they have status unknown partners? They looked at heterosexually active folks as well with some similar criteria, including sex with a known a person who's known to have HIV. And the estimate then is that 1 in 4 sexually active HIV-negative adult men who have sex with men have indications for PrEP, 1 in 4. An estimated 1 in 200 HIV-negative heterosexually active adults have indications for PrEP, and that means about 1.2 million people in the United States are probably PrEP eligible or should at least be approached for PrEP as potential candidates. So that is your denominator, which is pretty inspiring. And so I need to start off by sort of doing some simple messaging that PrEP is absolutely not antithetical to sexual health-focused prevention strategies. In fact, I'm going to argue briefly that PrEP is actually the gateway to sexual health-focused care for populations that healthcare has not adequately served. It's the same population that you serve. So I think of PrEP as an opportunity to increase sexual health service delivery and quality. So PrEP is recommended not as a standalone intervention, but rather a part of a comprehensive HIV prevention package. That means STI screening, footnote, correctly done. It means risk evaluation, something that you do all the time, and reevaluation, which, by the way, you guys do all the time. So it's really a remarkable space. That increase in PrEP uptake, there's an opportunity to improve STI testing frequency and, again, correct testing strategies in people who have never been tested correctly. I often tell the story, I still see patients, and when I see new people going on PrEP, I'll have like a 35-year-old black man come in to see me for PrEP, and I swab his butt for the first time, and he's like, that's never been done before. And I'm like, you've never been screened for STIs, right? And so it's been really amazing how PrEP brought that person to sexual health. And that's not a story in isolation. It is also an opportunity to address contraception in the appropriate population. And again, lightning is not going to strike. We should be saying yes. It is an opportunity for you to leverage the hell out of your HIV colleagues. They want PrEP to launch. And so it is really in your space to say, chase them. And if you want this to happen, work with me in a way that you've never worked with me before. Right? And all of my NYC folks are nodding because they know that's exactly what we're doing. So I'm going to give you an example of how PrEP supports sexual health messaging, especially around STIs. So we have this thing called the detailing kit. I think Sonali from LA referenced it. Thanks, Sonali. So we actually go out and do public health detailing. We have drug reps that go out to the community to talk about PrEP and PEP. And we have this action kit. And so we have four pillars, because New York loves pillars. Four pillars, we do, of what is to be discussed when the detailers go out. So look at the first two. Take a sexual history, for God's sake, from all patients as a part of routine care, and screen sexually active patients for STIs based on sexual history and clinical guidelines. And empiric treatment is often indicated depending on the situation. So please note, PEP and PrEP are 3 and 4. So the first message is a sexual health message. And then we go into PrEP and PEP, because that's what it's all about. It's not about just pumping drugs out into a community. It's about improving the sexual health of that community and having this be one of the pieces of the toolkit. Speaking of guidelines, the PrEP guidelines from the CDC actually say that you should do something pretty interesting, which is that you should assess people's symptoms for STI every 3 months and then test them every 6 months thereafter for bacterial STIs. And so I'm shouting out Stephanie from UCSF, because that's wrong. Sorry, CDC, don't get mad at me. Because the data really indicate that really PrEP is an opportunity to screen people every 3 months if they're at risk for an STD. So who has a syphilis epidemic? Okay, so in Stephanie's amazing data from San Francisco, what you see is that if you screen every 6 months, 20% of syphilis is delayed in its diagnosis. That's not good. And so 35.3% of any STIs are actually delayed in diagnosis if you wait for that 6-month mark. And then the idea of then let's screen people by symptoms is actually interesting as well, given the fact that all those burgundy spaces in the pie charts that you see, well, those are actually STIs that are asymptomatic. So do you have symptoms? Pretty much is like spitting in the wind, unless you're worried about urethral gonorrhea only. Then maybe you get something. So really the idea that that PrEP will, I hope, change a lot of our strategy, especially for MSM, and actually that will land on where the STD guidelines already are to say screen every 3 to 6 months in appropriate populations, I think is pretty inspiring. And so this is where I changed my talk a bit. I think PrEP provides an opportunity to reinforce traditional sexual health-focused prevention messages. So I'm just going to show you a little bit of NYC's strategy, which every time we say the word PrEP, the next word is condom. We say them together. Not to say that you have to do everything at once all the time, but that it really is about customizing your prevention strategy. and realizing that there's a lot of tools in the toolkit. So I'm going to show you an example of a tool that we've developed that actually is a piece of swag that makes the argument that PrEP and condoms and treatment as prevention and condoms need to be close together. But before I do that, I'm going to show you some of the condom data. No matter what we do, no matter what we say, no matter how many condoms we pump out in the community, how many press events we have doing it, one consistent trend is that people who use condoms all the time, and people who don't. I know. I'm smart, right? So, and that's like, wow. And so we're going to keep pumping condoms out, and we should keep pumping condoms out. But like injection drug use, we now have harm reduction for sexually active people beyond the condom. Syringe exchange does not prevent heroin overdoses. Syringe exchange prevents Hep C and HIV. This is syringe exchange for HIV. And so I'm going to show you one of our videos that actually shows how we try to blend the condom message along with treatment messages.
We all love to play, but we've got to play sure. So whatever your pleasure or wherever you are, always be ready with the right protection combination that works for you. New York City's made it easy with the new NYC Play Sure Kit. Carry PrEP medications for HIV protection, HIV treatment, and condoms for added protection from HIV and other STIs, or whatever works best for you. NYC Play Sure. We're healthy and plan on staying that way.
We're a dark kingdom of judgment. No, it's good. So the point is, like, we try to sort of blend the messages together. And so it really comes up with the idea that PrEP is not harm reduction. It is harm reduction. It's not harm elimination. It is neither rational nor expected that PrEP is a silver bullet for all sexual health-related issues. Prevention of unplanned pregnancies and STIs need different and complementary strategies. It is not one size fits all. So these are the slides you've seen 1,000 times, and I'm not going to go crazy with them. I'm just going to tell you that in the PROUD study, people who were on PrEP had an 86% reduction in HIV acquisition, but they had a lot of STIs. That was the very first slide in the first plenary. You can see why I wanted to kill myself. So there it is. So there's a lot of STIs, but they did not get HIV. In the Kaiser Permanente data, which was a real live implementation in San Francisco of PrEP, 50% of PrEP users were diagnosed with any STIs. They estimated 8.9 per 100 person years of HIV incidence is what they expected, and what they found was zero. They had no new infections in that cohort, despite the fact that they were swimming in STIs. What about this Epergay study that we already have seen this slide 6 times while I've been here, which is that they all had a lot of STIs when they were randomized, and once it became open label, they even had more STIs, right? Because they knew what they were getting. And then there's this meta-analysis that Jeff Klausner worked on, I'm not sure if he's in the room, that actually looked at comparing PrEP users to other MSM. I'm going to start by saying I love Jeff, but PrEP users are selecting for smokers and saying if you're doing a COPD study, there's more lung cancer. So it's like it's kind of hard to say what this means. But bottom line is, even though I think it's a little bit of a weird comparison, he demonstrated in that data as well that there was an increase in STI acquisition among PrEP users, realizing that PrEP users are supplemented for people who don't use condoms all the time. And that's how you get STIs. I also slipped one in that I wasn't asked for, which is the PARTNER study, which is about treatment as prevention. And so in this study, they looked at people who had an HIV-positive partner who was virally suppressed. The negative partner could not be on antiretrovirals or prophylaxis like PrEP. They were also swimming in STIs, 16% STIs, and there were no HIV infections in that study because of viral suppression. So treatment as prevention actually worked despite STIs. So, to use a line from Mike Cohen last night, STD acquisition does not overwhelm the HIV preventive efficacy of PrEP or TASP. IPREX, swimming in STIs. Kaiser, swimming in STIs. PROUD, swimming in STIs. Epergay, it's a French study. They're swimming in STIs. PARTNER study, they're swimming in STIs. Everyone's swimming in STIs. But on PrEP or TASP, people did not get HIV despite STIs. So data over dogma. We have to think about this. STD and HIV transmission risk may be uncoupled with antiretroviral therapy on board. This new biologic reality requires us to evolve how we harmonize HIV and STD prevention. And just because I see Matt Golden, you'll recognize this slide, Matt. Seatbelts don't prevent cancer. They don't. They prevent death and injuries and from car injuries. They do not prevent cancer. PrEP prevents HIV transmission. It does not directly prevent STI, but you use your seatbelts to get to your colonoscopy. You make it to your screening. You prevent cancer. PrEP is like that. Like, you are getting to sexual health for the first time. Think about my 35-year-old guy. Never screened for STIs despite condomless sex. No one ever swabbed his butt. Someone's never asked him, are you interested in having children even though you're an MSM? This is huge. So this is an opportunity to leverage your HIV universe to achieve the dream. And I have 0 minutes and I am done. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Go away.
Questions.
We do have time for a few questions, so if anyone would like to ask a question, please step up to the mic.
Take all mic.
Oh, no. No, 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 no.
Wow.
What? Those little kits that the video is in, there's PrEP in there?
So the story is that one of my patients came to me, and this 23-year-old from Harlem, HIV diagnosed, was a crystal meth user, got off crystal meth, was virally suppressed, and my last day there before I went to Department of Health, he brought his little Beats speaker case, I guess that's a brand name, mm-hmm. Beats speaker case, and in it he had his HIV meds, condoms, and lube. So I took mm-hmm. a picture of it, then I became the assistant commissioner in New York, and we produced it as a prevention device based on what a real human does. PrEP is not in it. It is provided to our providers that give out PrEP and give out HIV treatment, and they give it to the patient to say, if you want to have a little kit that you can run around with, you can just put your meds in there.
Okay.
We don't give it out with PrEP. No.
Say, what about episodic and women?
We don't. I mean, the messaging is we give out a lot of information about PrEP, including the biological differences in men and women, but we give them the kit so they can throw it in their bag because it's worked for a lot of other people. We've given out around 50,000 of them. And if you're really looking, next year, December, we're going to be launching one by a very famous international designer because we are New York after all. So. Great. Hi, sir.
Hi, Anatole Hansen, Guys at St. Thomas's. Thank you for the talk. I love the idea of PrEP as the hook, getting people to test, but obviously there's going to be a volume consideration. So how can we improve access to testing for these people? And are we going to use the PrEP prescription as a way of getting people back, or are we going to try and get people to test in other ways?
Well, so I think he knows what I'm going to answer, I think. Because I think that the trick is to make the testing as low threshold as possible. And so I feel like, you know, as we've seen models like the Dean Street Express that was also in the first session and was amazing, and other models, one of the things that we're doing in New York is when we're talking to programs that are launching PrEP, we're giving advice straight out, saying, like, you should create a pathway for express visits, whatever that means, so people can come and do samples without necessarily seeing you. So we've gotten a lot of feedback that the three-month visits are a lot for some clinical systems, and so the advice we're giving straight out is build it in a way where you don't always have to see the patient every time, but are still doing the work.
And what about self-testing for HIV? In the UK, people can test a point-of-care test at home. I'm not sure if that's available in the US, it's only 86% effective.
So we actually, in New York City, have, I can't spill all the beans because we're going to be hopefully presenting it somewhere else, but we will be presenting data on our social media-based home testing distribution that is continuing. And we have a version 1 and version 2.0, and I think we've actually shipped out about 2,500 kits to date using this. And so we're realizing the limits, and perfection is the enemy of good, even though it's not perfect testing. We do think that giving people the option of home testing who want that is really wise.
Thank you.
So more to come. Thank you.
Thank you.